Potting's winning.
Ing is winning.
So, I was at a funeral Saturday.
Oh, shit.
So I didn't really get to see much of the game.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you were telling me about that.
I did understand that Iowa won.
I'll walk you through the game.
I had a sense that Iowa was going to be in perfectly decent shape because this is probably one of the worst Wisconsin defenses that we've seen in a while. I did not expect that it would still need to be that Iowa game in order to win.
Correct.
And as you read the box score, and again, I didn't see, I saw bits and pieces, but this is just patently, obviously, one of these, you know, ultimate Kirk Ferentz games where,
yes,
where you throw for 94 yards and you get all of 11 first downs and 146 yards of total offense, and yet you somehow comfortably win by 2 touchdowns.
That's correct.
Because you surrounded yourself by the world's greatest defensive coordinator and one of the world's greatest special teams coordinators to cover up for your offense.
Yeah, that's called complimentary football.
It's called reductionist bullshit, but I'll take it. It's called another win in November.
I would love to know what the count is. If, you know, if we're talking complimentary football, I would love to know how many games the offense has bailed Phil Parker out of. Like, how often has that happened?
That's a really good question. So Parker took over in what, 12? Right?
Around there.
Tell you what.
I would have guessed earlier.
You give me a rundown of what happened in this game, and I'm going to start looking. It was so he did the – when Norm was sick in 11, he co-coordinated, but that was kind of – he got dropped into it, like, in September, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
12 was when all the coordinators flipped. That's when they did Greg Davis, and they did – and Phil moved in for Norm.
Okay,
let's just look at, I'm gonna go back and look through these and see if there's a single instance where Iowa, let's say, gave up 30 points
but won a shootout game.
You talk for a little while about the game and what happened. I'm gonna go looking for buried treasure.
So you mentioned that Iowa, you know, was going to be facing a Wisconsin team with a lackluster defense. And I just want you to know that the first two or three series of the game made Wisconsin and Jack Herbig in particular look like an NFL defense. And like Herbig looked like Von Miller. Iowa's blockers were whiffing with regularity. Like, it looked like a reversion to the worst that they had played all season long straight off the bat. And so you're watching it and you're like, oh, here we go again, right? Because we've seen Wisconsin do this to better Iowa offenses than this, which, I mean, they've all been better offenses than this. But it looked like a rerun of every Iowa trip to Madison over the last 8 years. And I'm not saying I was giving up on it because, you know, Wisconsin never had more than, you know, 3 points until Iowa had the lead. And even that 3 points off the turnover was a slog. Like, it's clear Graham Mertz didn't want to be out there. He was having a miserable day. And a lot of his incompletions were not competitive. They weren't drops, and most of them weren't even like knocked away by an Iowa defender. Some of them were. There were two picks, as you're aware, but they weren't on the same page. And the big games that he got, the couple of them that there were, one was a breakdown, and one was like there was one good throw that he made all game long, and that's how they got those 3 points, was the one good throw. The fact that Iowa was able to not, turn into a turtle, that Iowa stuffed up Braylon Allen, which was fantastic, because that's usually been the part of the script that has been different. Wisconsin typically, has always shut Iowa's offense down, but it's been buttressed by the fact that they know that as soon as they get the ball back, they can rush it for 30, 40 yards on any given drive and flip the field that way. And Wisconsin wasn't flipping the field on that game. So that into a situation where Iowa's defense and special teams could win them the game. And fortunately, that's exactly what they did. And they won it so decisively that you can't even say that Iowa didn't deserve that win, because all of those winning plays just stacked up so immensely that if Iowa's offense was even functional, this would have been like a 38-3 game.
I mean, and I guess that was my point going into it, was watching, I've watched a lot of Wisconsin this year, shockingly enough. And
They're
that
a
was my thought.
fascinating watch. They're
They really
fascinating.
are. They really are. And
Not in a
kind
great
of
way,
a,
but
kind of, I'm not going to say bizarro, because that would mean they were the opposite, and they're not. They're very much in the mold of Iowa, but sort of a bizarre Iowa in that they're not quite as good defensively as Iowa. They're probably slightly better offensively, but they're actually more hamstrung by their quarterback than even Iowa is.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
And it's hard to
And
find a
Graham
team that
Mertz
would
is a
actually have that
five-star
issue.
QB. And it's especially fascinating because Wisconsin's never that team that has critical, like fatal flaws with its execution. You can say what you want about their talent level. But they're the sort of team that if they're doing what they or if they're doing what they want to do, they're going to win, and they know how to do what they want to do. But it's fascinating to watch that start to unravel the way it has this season, because once the one or two dominoes are out of place on that roster, it's a mess. It really is. Go
If
ahead.
this is the, I'll just say this, and I, again, I'm not a Wisconsin fan by any means, but if this is supposed to be
No.
the dress rehearsal for Jim Leonard, Lance Leopold's putting in his 2 weeks right now, I think.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And Leonard, bless him. His players love him. And things haven't completely gone to mess, but he doesn't have that. He hasn't restored any real functionality to that team. And maybe it's too much to ask of him, especially at this point in his career. It probably is. Right? Like you look at Luke Fickell. He got his chance. He was thrown into the mix leading Ohio State, and he led them to 6-6, which was and continues to be their worst performance in decades. Well, now look at him. Right? Like that experience was tremendously helpful to him. He took freaking Cincinnati and not the Bengals to the college football playoff, and they held their own. They were never going to win it, but they didn't get monstered. And so I don't think Fickell does that well at Cincinnati without that Ohio State stretch. And wherever Leonard ends up, if this is sort of similar to Bo Pelini having that little cup of Joe running LSU, that helped him too. Wherever he ends up down the road, and honestly, it wouldn't be the worst thing for him to just be the defensive coordinator at Wisconsin whenever Leopold shows up there. But
That
like,
would be fantastic if that's okay. They could actually pull it off, but I kind of feel like this is setting him up for a head coach spot somewhere. Maybe not Wisconsin right off the bat, but I feel like
maybe
the
not.
next move is
Maybe not.
probably a MAC slash Mountain West job.
Well, I hope he respects himself better than head up at Eastern Michigan, but You know, like,
Central's coming open. That's an interesting job. All right, so let's get down to brass tacks on the Phil Parker bailout special. He's been the defensive coordinator here for now 11 seasons. All right, so starting in 12. So from 12 to 22, I've gone back and looked for games where Iowa has given up more than 28 points and still won. That's happened 5 times.
In 12 years. Okay.
Okay. And let's see. Let's get two of these out of the way.
Okay.
2014 Indiana.
Oh,
Iowa 45, Indiana 29, but Iowa was up 28-7 at the end of the first quarter.
Is that not the one where they? No, I'm thinking of earlier. Okay. Yep. Yep. Okay.
That's the one where Rudock threw they literally scored 28 points in 5 minutes at the end of the first quarter. They threw a touchdown then a Desmond King pick six. So the 45 doesn't even count the fact that there's defense involved here. Desmond King pick six, a Damond Powell 72-yard bubble screen, and a Jonathan Parker 60-yard run. All in the course of a 5-minute stretch that put Iowa up 28-7, and they coasted to the finish. It was never really in doubt from there, right?
Never
so that's not really a bailout because this was they essentially had the scrubs in for the second half. All right.
Yep.
2016 Purdue, same thing. Iowa was up 28-0 with 4 minutes to go in the first half, and then Purdue got 3 fourth quarter touchdowns from down 42-14. To make it 49-35. But again, it was never really in doubt. They never got within two touchdowns of Iowa after Iowa got ahead. All right, so let's take those out of play. That means there's three games left. All right. 2018 Minnesota feels a lot like those games, but not quite. Iowa was up 21-7 with 6 minutes to go in the first half. And then went to the half up 28-17 and then basically traded scores with Minnesota through the second half to win 48-31.
So far they've never trailed in any of these games.
In any of these games, right? They've been ahead.
And usually ahead by double digits. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And every one of these games so far, they've been ahead by at least 14 points at some point.
Okay.
And in fact, ahead by 14 points in the fourth quarter in all of them. Mm-hmm. So there's a Miguel Racinos field goal on this one at 9:20 of the fourth quarter that put us up 41-24. And then there's a late Mekhi Sargent touchdown run to make it 48-31. So again, probably scrub time for most of that. But that one's at least close enough to consider.
Okay.
2015 Minnesota, which was, a hell of a game.
That was the blackout game.
The blackout game, right? And that one really did go back and forth, but Iowa was up 24-14 at the half and 27-14 late in the third. Minnesota did make a game of it in the fourth. And Iowa had to score two more touchdowns in the fourth quarter to cement the win, and they win 40-35.
Just point out, Minnesota never had the ball with the chance to take the lead in the second half.
They did. Wait, let me check and see. Yeah, they did. They did not, because there's a touchdown there. Yeah, no, they did not. At no point were they within one score in the second half. Okay,
I remember writing it.
if that's the standard, then there's one game. And it's the most bonkers game of the entire Kirk Ferentz era. Can you name it?
Not sure. Michigan never.
No. 2017 Iowa State.
Oh, of course.
Iowa 44, Iowa State 41. Complete shootout, complete back and forth. Yeah. Absolute crazy ass football game. Iowa wins in overtime. That one, this one really needed the bailout, right? Iowa's up 21-10 with 7 minutes to go in the third. and gives up touchdown, touchdown, touchdown in three straight series to go down 31-21, then scores touchdown, field goal in the next two series to tie it, gives up a touchdown on a 74-yard pass, and then comes back with a minute nine left and hits Wildly over the middle, who bounces off like nine guys and takes it in for the touchdown to send it to overtime, and then they win in overtime. That's the one. The one that's absolutely Iowa's offense bailing out Philip Parker. One time in 11 years.
The exception that proves the rule, baby.
There have been more games where Phil Parker has bailed out Iowa's offense in this season than Iowa has bailed out Phil Parker in total.
Oh, my God.
Complimentary football at its finest.
Yeah. But, you know, they posted a clip of Ferentz in the locker room afterwards. Of course. And, you know, he's getting his emotions
weepy.
Worked
he's
up.
Weepy.
Of course. Yeah. Yep. Of course. Got a trophy to show for it. And he says, "That's November football, boys." Woo!
Well, like, you realize it's been over 3 years now since Iowa's lost a game in November.
Yeah, and I'm sure every single one of those players knows it too.
Yeah.
So like if that's the story that he can tell them, and story, like, I don't mean story in like a lying way, right? Like if that's the information that he gives them, and that's what motivates them to keep the string going, all right.
Sure.
Great, like that's textbook good coaching. But it is ultimately a story, because say what you will about November weather, but it's not like they got derailed by the, you know, cold and blustery conditions when this is the same team that in week one in like borderline paradise against a D2 team, the best D2 team or the best FCS team. But they scored 3 points on offense. Right. Was that September football?
That's September football, boys. I mean, the stat I always loved, and it got sufficiently nullified in the last couple of years because they've had some pretty good runs. But going into the 2015 season, Ferentz had one perfect September. They play. This is what they do, and I don't even have a problem with it. Like if you're a developmental program and you're going to develop over the course of the season, you're going to be better in November than you are in September. And the plan is to be better than your opponents in November than you would have been if you saw them in September. Yeah. And I'm totally fine with that. Like, I love winning games in November because those are the ones that really matter, right? That's usually when we always see Nebraska. Yeah. We usually see Minnesota. We usually see Wisconsin. You win those games. My hat's off to you. Hell of a season. And if you're playing for a Big Ten West championship, which somehow they are again, that in and of itself is probably a successful season.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, and it also dovetails with what he's said is his program goal from day one, which is win the Big Ten, right?
Oh, I thought you were going to say 8-4 in a Music City Bowl berth.
Well, that's if you read between.
Wait, no, excuse me. Outback Bowl berth. I shouldn't say Music City. That's been a bridge too far. Outback Bowl berth. All right, let me ask you this.
Okay.
2 weeks left to go in the season. They got to go to Minnesota this week.
It's gonna be tough.
Minnesota, as we talked about just recently, they do have a tendency against Iowa to somehow turn into sort of barn burners, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what Minnesota's done this year, once they actually got, like, aside from the trip to Michigan State early in the season, they've not necessarily been like setting the world on fire offensively. Now, some of it's been injuries, right?
Yeah, but Michigan State didn't want to be there. that was only in name only a Big Ten opponent.
I mean, but since that time, right? Mm-hmm. 10 points in a loss to Purdue, 14 points in a loss at Illinois, 17 points and a loss at Penn State. They scored 31 on Rutgers in a game that Rutgers was just not really ready for. 20 against Nebraska and 31 against Northwestern last week. Not the sort of point totals you expect from a real juggernaut of an offense, right? And you know, they're up against this defense this week. I have a hard time believing that they're going to necessarily just run the ball like they want to run the ball against Iowa's front seven. And that's usually when Iowa's defensive backs go to feast. And I could absolutely see Iowa basically running a rerun of the Wisconsin game at Minnesota this week and coming away relatively unscathed, right?
Yeah.
And then it's Nebraska. And I didn't get to see much last week. It certainly feels like Nebraska's pretty much done.
Yeah.
Now they might find something for play in Iowa, but it's going to be a cold, miserable day after Thanksgiving in Iowa City. Mm-hmm. I don't think their quarterback's going to come back, so they're probably on their like second, third string quarterback. They've not looked good in recent weeks. I think the ship has probably sailed. Their coach is not going to get hired for that job. That's become abundantly obvious. No, like there's not a whole lot to play for, right? So let's say that Iowa wins both of those games in the way they've won their games over the course of the season, namely, you know, 20-10 in both of them.
Sure. Okay.
And let's just say at least one of those 20, one of the touchdowns that leads to those 40 total points is a defensive touchdown.
Naturally.
Yeah. And if anything, like last week, there'll probably be another one that's on short. It's on a short field. So let's say that Iowa's, again, lackluster on offense. We finished the season with exactly two games where Spencer Petras throws for more than 200 yards. We don't see an offensive explosion against either one of these teams that makes any sense or isn't coming in garbage time. But Iowa's 8-4. Mm-hmm. They win the Big Ten West. Mm-hmm. They go to Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Does Brian Ferentz keep his job?
Because
I think yes. I think he does. I think he comes back next year if that's the case. Because it doesn't matter what the offense actually does. If they win the Big Ten West, there's no way he's getting fired. And there's no way he's going to get a life raft to the NFL. It's going to be, we're going to run it back again because we've won two straight Big Ten West.
And to some certain extent, there is a little bit of logic there. And not sure. Just from our cynical standpoint. Right.
Like, sure. Absolutely.
If it ain't broke, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, objectively, the offense is broke. And
what do you mean? They won two straight division championships. How could it be broke?
That's complimentary football, Patrick.
That's complimentary football. Like, I don't know if you know, but they won 10 games last year. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Yeah.
You know, I think if they finish the season 8-4, and 6-3 in the conference with losses to the conference losses being to Ohio State, Michigan, and an Illinois team at the peak of a pretty impressive defensive performance at the beginning of Burt's season.
Yeah.
I think they shrug off all the criticism. They say September was September. We were shorter receivers. We were putting together a new offensive line. And we played the rest of the season the way we wanted to play it. We won every game in November. We won the Big Ten West. We went to the conference championship game, gave ourselves a chance to win the conference championship. I don't see any reason why we would change anything. Come on back, Brian. Here's a raise.
the raise might cause some problems. But that's about it. Because ultimately, you're listing off objective things that you can tick off on a resume. And those are objectively like good things. So is the pressure going to be there from the farm mafia? I don't think so. I mean, they're going to sell fewer tickets. One, because it's impossible to sell more. But two, the home slate sucks next year. And the vibes just suck this year for like a majority of the season. It was not even like fun to go to games. So that's going to have a negative benefit or a negative benefit. That's a thing.
A detriment.
Like that's the word. It is going to have a detriment lawyered on tickets.
Yes.
But if they sell, let's say 60,000 or like if they put 60,000 or 63,000 in the seats every year. Okay. Or every game next year. Okay. Like,
yeah,
that's not
enough to make a change. That's not enough pressure to make a change.
No,
right.
No, I,
Especially when you can explain it away the way that you just did. We've got a bad home slate next year. This year I thought about buying season tickets, and I live 250 miles away because the home slate was so good. I thought, well, hell, I'll get in on it now. Right.
Yeah.
And you look at next year's and it sucks. There's just not any fun there. So I absolutely could see them just excusing away any decrease in ticket revenue due to that. And second, ticket revenue doesn't matter that much anyway. The TV money is all that really matters. And they've got that coming in no matter what. So I don't think there's gonna be any pressure on Ferentz to do anything unless Barta just says, like, look, I can't keep justifying this. But how could you not keep justifying it when they keep winning?
Right. And like, again, if they win out, it's an if, but if they do it, we're talking about a team that's 18-6 in its last two regular seasons.
Right.
And like you said, two division championships.
And you throw in, I mean, even the COVID year, they were 6-2. Like,
and they were playing bonkers by the end of it.
They were playing great football.
Yeah. Because they had Michigan, who had no desire to be on a football field. And so that got canceled because of COVID. Then their bowl game gets canceled again because of COVID. And it was going to be, what, Missouri? A team that...
Missouri. It could have very well been
middling at best.
I mean, that Missouri team was 4-6.
Yeah. Yeah, like no business being in a bowl whatsoever, right?
Oh, wait, hold on. That might not be right. Hold on. I'm looking at this year's schedule. Never mind. They were... The 2020 Missouri Tigers were 5. They were 5-5. And their five wins were Arkansas, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Kentucky, and LSU. The LSU win's kind of impressive, but
they beat nobody with a winning record.
They beat nobody. They played five ranked teams and they lost to all five of them. They lost to Bama by 19. They lost to Tennessee by 23. They lost to Florida by 24. They didn't play Georgia. Never mind. That one got postponed.
Yeah, they did.
And then they played Georgia again later. They lost by 35. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they played four ranked teams. They lost to all four, and they lost to Mississippi State too. Like, they were a thoroughly average team that Iowa probably could very well have beaten in that game. Right?
They would have pummeled them. Yeah. And it would have been in front of no fans, and it would have been just a wasteland of a game. Let's throw that 8-2 in there. Because we're dealing hypotheticals already.
The year before they were 10-3.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a dominant performance on both sides of the ball against USC in the bowl game. Like, again.
Yeah.
This is, if it weren't for 2002-04 holding such a vaunted place in the history of Iowa football, this would be the golden years of Iowa football, even with them going 8-4 this year, and even with the offense kind of sucking. This year it really sucks, and that's how you end up at 8-4.
Yeah, and that's going to be the feather in Kirk's cap, and it's a really pretty feather. It's obvious, though, that this is a top five defense year in, year out. And so if you write a top five defense to Tampa every year,
and that's just it, right? Like, there becomes a question of where the goal setting should be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. At what point do you go? And I hesitate to turn into a Nebraska fan here in doing this, right?
It's contagious.
But, well, yeah, exactly. Although I had a lot of them mad at me last night. Okay. Here's the records from 21 back. 21-10-4. 26-2, which we could extrapolate pretty easily into something like 9-3, 10-4, right? If it was a full season. 19-10-3. 18-9-4.
Mm-hmm.
17 was a bit of a hiccup, but they were 8-5. It wasn't like they were terrible, right?
Yeah, won a bowl game.
16 was a completely injury riddled disaster of a season that finished 8-5. And oh, by the way, 15, you went what, 12-2? 12-2 and went to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
You're bowl pollinating them at that point if you get rid of anybody off of that. Right? Like, and the question becomes, when is it that 10-4 isn't good enough? When it's obvious that there's one thing that could be fixed to take 10-4 to potentially 12-2.
Yeah.
Or 13-1 or whatever. And are we just going to be content with 10-4, which is typically what Iowa fans say? Yeah, we're not the crazy ones. We're not the ones from to our west that get mad about 10-win seasons. We'll take 10 wins pretty much every year.
Oh, but you've been on the internet the last 2 years. Like, there's many fans who have hated the fact that Iowa hasn't, like, taken that opportunity to take that next step. I tried to do like a live reaction podcast stream thing, and it was agony because everyone was so mad that Iowa wasn't, you know, scoring 40 points a game. And I get that, you know, like, upset vocal minorities are always going to be louder than the usual fan base who are like, no, that's good with me, right? Like, nobody ever calls into a post-game show and is like, yeah, that was fine with me. I have no strong feelings. Right. Like, those people just don't show up for that. And
yeah,
that's called being mentally, like, well balanced. But there is such an undertone of disappointment, to the point where, one, there were fans booing during week one, which prompted the Iowa athletic department's official, like, Twitter account or the football team's official Twitter account to be like, we're making adjustments and we're going to learn and we're going to grow.
Oh God, yeah.
Which is the football equivalent of an apology. And then they didn't really adjust or grow for another 2 months, but here we have it now. Yeah. It's going to get to a point where you have to ask, don't these guys deserve to play for a little bit more than the chance to get wiped out in Indianapolis? Don't they deserve to play for a little bit more than the Outback Bowl or whatever, the Ameritrade, whatever they call it? I've already forgotten what the name is.
The Tampa Bowl, whatever the hell it's called.
Sure, yeah.
The Pirate Bowl.
Yeah, the Pirate Ship Bowl. Which, you know, if they play an SEC team that is equivalent in the SEC standings, they're going to mop the field with Iowa. And have you ever tried to mop grass?
That's very terrible. Difficult to do. It's terrible to do. Yeah, it's very difficult.
You don't want
to
do that. No.
It's more of a raking. You probably want to rake.
Yeah.
Can you rake the field with Iowa?
You're going to get grass stains everywhere. It's counterproductive.
But I guess I go back to, you know, Stephen Godfrey, our old buddy from SB Nation, repeatedly talks about how fascinated he was with Iowa fans at the Rose Bowl, who were perfectly happy to not be in the playoff because it meant they got to go to Pasadena over New Year's Day, right?
Yeah.
And that's always the case with Iowa. But on the same token, to a smaller extent, there is a significant portion of the fan base and the moneyed portion of the fan base that is fine with a trip to Tampa. And frankly, at this point, those are the ones that really matter. It's not mm-hmm. It's not people screaming on Twitter. It's not you and me and Ross and Mike and Hawkeyes, and like, we don't matter.
It's
the people that are going to show up and buy tickets, and the people that are going to show up for bowl games and spend their money to travel to wherever it is that Iowa's going. You know, I laugh about it because my dad loves bowl trips. And
sure,
he was telling me the other day, he's like, I really hope we go to Nashville. I've never been to Nashville. It's a drive. It's not a flight. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to go down there for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfectly great. I love Nashville too. It's a lot of fun. But the expectation setting is, I don't think it's ever going to get to the point where we're going to go 10-4 just ain't good enough, no matter how we get there, or 9-5 ain't good enough, no matter how we get there, even if it means a completely unwatchable product on the field, because at some point we kind of embrace that stuff.
Kirk certainly does embrace that stuff. And I think it's the feeling that, like, You're saying that the records are the records, and as long as you hit those numbers, you're doing good. Like okay, if we're treating records like KPIs, sure, all right. But I mean, we both have eyes and semi-functioning brains. Like, they're the product stinks, and it was on the verge of collapse this year. Let's not get that twisted. Like, the players have rallied around this whole, well, everybody gave up on us. Everybody was reacting to what they were seeing. Like, kudos, by all means, the players have shown more mental fortitude than any of the fans that you're going to see, complaining. And that includes us, by the way. Like, kudos to them for turning it around. But it's inescapable that they've been leaving meat on the bones the last couple years. And when you're leaving meat on the bones in seasons where you are or are about to compete for a conference championship, if you're competing for a division title, what you're leaving off because you're so committed to having your kid coaching next to you, but which, by the way, come back to that in just a little bit. Let me finish my point first, but I heard a take here that was fascinating, and it was about somebody else entirely, but let's put a pin in that one. But Kirk having an attachment to a coach who he would not be attached to if the guy's name was Brian Jones. It is, I think it's okay for fans to say, oh no, hey, wait a second. Like, if he's not going to take, like, if football's such a life and death game, a game of inches, unless your kid's the offensive coordinator, then it's the defense's job, right? I understand how fans can look at that and say, hey, like, we expect you to take that last little step and turn this, from a, well, maybe we'll be in the top 20 team into a, no, we belong in the top 10. Especially because we got that taste of it after the Penn State game. After the Penn State game, everybody was like, now we've got what we want. Now we are like, were we too far over our skis? Absolutely. But you couldn't tell us that at the time. Not after beating Penn State.
No.
Not after what Kinnick was like. Kinnick was a religious experience that game. And so to go from that to like 500 for the next 14 games and then only turn that around with three straight wins, this sort of feels like, I don't want to say it's a dead cat bounce, but it's kind of close. Or at the very least, we can't rule it out. So just falling back on records, just falling back on counting wins, I think is a dangerous proposition. In terms of whether or not you're setting this team up for long-term success over the next 5 years. That's all I'm going to say.
What was the other point you want to come back to that you had a hot take on?
So, there was a fellow, I think it was Joe Thomas, but one of the retired NFL linemen. I'm about 90% sure it's Joe Thomas. But he's on one of these NFL talk shows, right? And they're all it's they're just doing this like round table, and the topic of Jeff Saturday being hired by the Colts shows up.
It was Joe, I was
And
talking about it. It was Joe Thomas, yes.
yeah, okay, yeah. And so Thomas mentions like it's sort of a slap in the face to all the coaches that Saturday gets given that gig without ever coaching in college and pros. And one of the reasons that Thomas mentioned was that being a football coach, a head coach, especially in the NFL, is such a time-consuming proposition to the point where you're not spending time with your family. Like you get maybe one afternoon a week, or the coach that he was mentioning in his example, and look it up by all means because I'm not doing it justice. It was a really remarkable monologue by Thomas. But he was saying that the coach that he was playing for would see his kids twice a week if it was a home game. And one of those times was him driving the kids home from the stadium and then going back to work. And that was the level of sacrifice that football coaches, football head coaches in particular, have to make, which was your family life. And so that is an instance where football coaches in particular have such a desire to have, like, if their kids don't want to coach, they're not going to coach. But if the kids do want to coach, if the kids do want to be part of dad's whole football thing, that it's rewarding to them because it's an opportunity that they really wouldn't have otherwise, right? Like, it's their only chance to have a normal's not the right word, but a more substantial father-son relationship. And I had never really considered that part with this whole Kirk and Brian thing.
Yeah.
That's
a very good
like
point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys like to coach their kids, coaches' sons, like that's, or coaches' daughters too. But you know, that's always been a trope, and the stereotypes exist for a reason. And it's, you know, let me coach this in you. But it had never really stuck for me that this would be a proxy for the dynamic that most fathers want. I don't think that's too far of a limb to go out on. So looking at that, I have a little bit of sympathy. I still don't think it's in Brian's best interest to coach at Iowa next year, objectively. But I understand on a fundamental, like, emotional level why he's still there in a way that I hadn't before.
Here's a stat for you, just okay, to show where things sit as far as this offense. This is the third year of Spencer Petras as starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If he doesn't throw for 300 yards in any of the next, presumably, three games, and he doesn't come back next year, and I'm still not entirely certain on what his eligibility is. I think he still has a year left, technically.
Yeah. I don't know if he's got a year of interest in this job again, but yeah.
Yeah, no, like, okay. I'm not saying that he necessarily is going to take us up on the offer, right?
Right.
But he has unquestionably the lowest, highest output by an Iowa quarterback with more than 1 year as a starting quarterback in the Ferentz era. In other words,
and that's saying something.
The most yards he's thrown for in a game is the 265 against Purdue in 2020.
Ooh. What's his highest in 21?
The highest number that he has in 21 is 259 in that blowout of Maryland.
Okay.
Aside from that, the highest was 224 against Colorado State the week before that.
That's brutal.
Since
that's two games over 250.
Since
over
October 250. Since October 30th of last year, so that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games plus the rest of this season. So we're talking, what, 12 total games now?
15. No. They've played 10 games.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So yeah, 14 games. 15 games. 15 games.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on Wisconsin, Northwestern, and Nebraska last year because he didn't start, or he was injured against Wisconsin, right?
Sure, yeah.
And he only came in for a few snaps against Northwestern, and he only played basically the second half against Nebraska.
Yeah. No one's holding that against him. Yeah.
Right. But even with that considered, he has more games under 100 yards in that period than he has over 200 yards.
Good God.
Like, it's gone off the rails.
Oh.
And the idea that, like, this is a totally fine thing because we're going to win with it is insanity, because it doesn't take anything to get to a level where this gets better based off of what we're seeing. It's nuts. It's actually nuts. And yet, I don't think anything's going to change.
No, it's like...
Unless Brian just decides, like, I just don't want to do it anymore. I want to go somewhere else. Kirk's not going to force him out. Marta's not going to force him out.
No.
And if they bring him back next year and everyone goes, have you lost your mind? They're going to go, I don't know if you noticed, but we won the Big Ten West last year. Like,
yeah. And again, like, okay, you know, you can't really argue with that.
Yeah.
But it's like if you had a buddy whose hobby it was to get just lit and then like make knives and clean knives and just play with knives. Let's say he gets drunk and juggles knives. And then you look up and you're like, Hey, Steve, cut it out.
And stop Steve says, juggling with knives.
Right. And Steve in his drunken stupor says, well, I haven't hurt myself yet. And I mean, yeah, I guess you're right, but like, don't do this to yourself. And that's just sort of how I feel about the offense. Like, you don't have to hamstring yourself like this. Your defense can be great and you can throw for 350 yards. Like, they're not exclusive things.
The one other guy who's in play for the Steve Award, ironically enough, CJ Beathard. Beathard's top output as a quarterback was 278 in 2 years as a starter.
That those offenses in particular were rough.
The 15 offense was good. It was just run, right? And he just had to do enough to get by on the running side of it. The 16 offense was awful.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of injury stuff too. But like, his numbers, when you go back and look at them, were not great. Which again, I think goes to this offense post Ken O'Keefe, as bad as Ken O'Keefe appeared to be at the time. This offense post Ken O'Keefe has gotten really, really, really bad.
Yeah, it has.
Beathard in 15, in a year where they were undefeated, he threw for 77 yards against Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
He threw for 97 against Nebraska. And in 16, he threw for, 66 against Michigan in a 14-13 win.
He had 66 yards in that game?
He had 66 yards in that game.
Because like half of them were on that.
8 of 19 for 66 yards, one TD and one pick.
And the pick should have been a backbreaker too.
And then he followed it up the next week by throwing for 80 yards against Illinois.
Oh God.
He went over 200 yards just once in his last 8 games. He threw for 55 in the bowl game against Florida.
He was barely able to walk in that game.
Yes, it was a disaster.
That was uncomfortable to watch.
7 of 23 with 3 picks.
Yeah.
So
that, in a weird way, gives more weight to the idea that Brian's going to be back, and two, you shouldn't even be mad about it, right? Because at the end of the day, if Brian's not the offensive coordinator, whoever it is just going to be running the same offense.
Right. And I guess the question becomes like, who's going to do it? Right. If the replacement's coming, who's going to be the replacement? Is it somebody who's on staff? Because there's nobody on staff who's going to be able to stand up and say, no, we're not going to run that. We're going to run my system. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no former player at a level that's going to be able to come back and immediately become the offensive coordinator. He's not going to bring Ken O'Keefe back again.
No.
The best case scenario is Joe Philbin, probably. And it's not like Philbin's, you know, immersed in some sort of newfangled system working for Mike McCarthy at Dallas.
No. I mean, this
could there be more effective coaching or play calling within that offensive system? Yeah, probably.
Sure, sure. And honestly, if the offensive line finally starts to improve and those improvements like actually like coagulate and turn into something solid, then a lot of these criticisms are going to disappear too, because the Big Ten is a line conference and the Big Ten West is a line heavy division.
Yes. It's
always been the case. And the fact that Iowa even has a winning record with what's been going on the offensive line is, for the last two seasons, no less, borderline miraculous. And another one of those, like, Kirk can't keep getting away with it. And then he just keeps getting away with it. Keeps doing it.
So
if the line really does, like, get it together next season, we're not having this conversation again. I really don't think so. It doesn't matter.
No, I don't think so either.
And there's real reason to believe that it will have its stuff together next year. So, like, this, if this is just a hiccup and Iowa gets through its hiccup seasons with 18 regular season wins, which is plausible, like, Kirk might be right.
Yeah.
Kirk might be right.
He might be right.
We might be the brokey bozos that he thinks we are.
You stupid pores. Stop messing with
me. If he could say that at the podium, he would. Gladly.
I'm of the belief that he made that comment about the post game at Ohio State. And he thought that the fans would rally to his support. And when they didn't, he went, oh, I better do something.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, and then suddenly it became like, we got to do something with this offense. We can't just keep rolling it out there and winning 10-7 or losing 54-10. Like, we have to actually.
He believed it even after the statement.
Yeah.
Because he went right next to Gary Dolphin and was like, yeah, well, you know, I just let my emotions get a hold of me. But really, that guy was a fucking asshole, wasn't he? That tone,
yeah.
That fucking asshole tone.
Yeah.
Like, that's.
That's exactly right.
He was not sticking by any cordiality.
No, not at all. And the statement was clearly drafted by somebody else. And, mm-hmm. and as soon as he had a microphone from him, he went right back to it. But yeah. He got no support from anybody in the fan base. There was so little, like, you know what, you're right. You should stick it to him, Kirk. What does that guy know? It was all like, thank God someone finally asked him the question. And when that happened, then it became like, oh, shit, we got to do something. Which is how you ended up with, we beat Northwestern by a score that you would expect from a game against that Northwestern team, followed by a week of, here's the scheme we used against Northwestern in every outlet they could find. Like, it was basically like, look at how Brian Ferentz out schemed everybody in the Northwestern mm-hmm. game.
I wonder how that made its way to reporters. Just curious.
Yeah. Huh. How interesting. Right after Kirk called them all pores. All right. Anyway, I fully expect Iowa's going to win the next two games.
I think it is more likely than not.
And then I think that Iowa's going to, I think as a result of that and the result of Illinois losing to Michigan, that Iowa's going to win the West in just an offensive fashion. And then maybe a lack of offensive fashion. And then get the doors blown off them in the Big Ten Championship, as everybody would expect. Go to a perfectly reasonable bowl game.
Tampa.
Compete. And we'll be right back here next year doing the same thing.
Absolutely.
So, enjoy the wins. I'm enjoying
and
the wins.
Put your little hand in mine. It's a cold one out there, Pat. Yeah, it's a cold one.
That's potting is winning. I'm just happy you didn't sing Smooth. We'll talk to you next
week. You got the reference.